Well, hello. Welcome here to the very first, the inaugural. It's a historic moment. This is the first King's Baptist Church podcast. It's so new that it doesn't even have a name yet. What we've got is a computer, we've got a microphone, we've got me, Mike Bartlett, your host this morning, and my first guest. His name, well, he's gone by many names over the years. But the name that we know him best by is Jason Lippitt. Jason, welcome. Welcome here.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for the beverage, and thanks for me being here, I guess. I'm a little bit nervous, I have to say.
Yeah.
Just a smidge.
Well, have your fizzy drink and
Okay.
we'll just get chatting and see how this goes. I think the reason that we wanted to have a podcast is because in the context of community at any given time of a few hundred people, even if you work on staff, there's a sense that you don't know everybody like you wish you necessarily would know everybody.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you
Like,
mean.
do well, I mean, that actually brings up an interesting first question. Do you want to know everybody?
Well, I personally find people amazingly interesting and fascinating. And so, yeah, quite often I do want to know. Even to the point where, yeah, maybe I won't say that. But just that you do, I feel what am I trying to say? Infinitely interested in people.
Yeah.
So getting to know more always seems better than not.
So that's interesting. How do you feel about people getting to know you though?
Oh.
Maybe that's why you're feeling a bit awkward.
Oh, yeah. No, I probably just worry about how it comes across because I'm not sure I always have the right words. But I do like. You're right, I do ask questions more than I like questions being asked of me. That
Yeah,
is
well,
actually a fair comment when I think about
I think it's great, and I think it's kind of serendipitous actually of this the fact that you're the guinea pig in a sense for this podcast because you are much better at asking questions of people and getting them talking. And if I reflect on our own relationship, which is long, we've known one another since
Yes.
our teenage years.
Yep.
And you've always been much better at getting me talking. And even now, I'm still talking and you're not. So I'm going to sort that around. And we're going to explore some of what this podcast could actually be about. So I guess just what we obviously want to explore is the way that we understand that we're participating with God at the moment in our life. Or really, I mean, to flip it around a different way, to can think about, talk about. What it is that God is inviting us into at the moment in our lives. And so that's on a sort of deep level, but in the midst of that, we might, explore a little bit about just you and what interests you in life, what's some of your life experiences. Maybe you could tell us some stories, but yeah, let's start there. Let's start with what's God doing in your life at the moment?
Right at the moment, from a practical point of view, I'm learning new skills. Just from a straight out practical, I realise that I'm learning all sorts of technical skills at the moment because of the nature of what we're doing at church. It seems to be we're always having to learn something new about sound or about IT stuff. So that's definitely stretching me, but I quite like learning new things, even though my brain seems a bit slower at picking it up. Yeah, starting to realize that age actually does make a little bit of a
How
difference.
old are you, Jason?
I am 45 at this present point in time.
Wow, 45 years
Yeah.
old. Fantastic. So that was an interesting response. I sort of asked, I started that question with asking you what's God doing in your life? And you made, and I'm not saying that God can't teach us practical things, but do you mean that God is teaching you technical skills and IT skills at the moment?
Well, I think he, well, there you go. I would think that I'm someone who believes that God's in all and around all. So if you want to put it that It sounds weird to say, but I guess in some ways, yeah, God's involved in those things or allowing those things to exist so that I can learn new technical skills. But I guess I wanted to start with that when I was thinking about the deeper issues that God is probably teaching me at the moment. It's something probably just being reminded of. Yeah, I think when you've been around a little bit, you realise...
Been around where?
Around the world.
You mean just ages. Been around?
Yeah.
So your reference is to your 45 years?
Maybe. Okay. My reference to 45 years.
All right.
Maybe it's my reference to being involved in Christian community for a while now, and follower of Jesus. I guess you've made me lose my train of thought.
No, that's okay, because I'm going to jump on that, right? So yeah. Just I'm going to jump into the story, because that's significant in terms of, yes, you have been a follower of Jesus for a significant period of time, but you didn't grow up in a faith-based family, did you?
No, I didn't.
So go on, tell us a bit about that then.
I will tell you a bit about that, but I feel like I wanted to come back to that deep.
Okay.
Talking about what God teaches us, is that I realise sometimes there's not heaps of new stuff. We know a lot more than we put into practice.
Go on.
And so I felt like I was being reminded of something that I knew that I hadn't been putting into practice. And that was that thing that I've just seen it from someone else's point of view. Yeah. Especially at this sort of time with Corona and stuff like that. It's very easy for me. And maybe I'm not unique. I just think it's not probably the norm. But there'd be other people who love new things, like love life changing. And there's an element that things are changing all the time. And that actually excites me. There's a part of what's going on that makes me go, oh, this is fun. It's changing all the time. But if I'm not careful, the way I interact with others is not... what I'm looking for, I guess, not gracious, or I'm just being reminded that I need to think about how I react to others. Yeah, that I need to be, most of my interactions, I need to actually be mindful of how other people are feeling, because that's not other people's experience of this time at the moment.
Yeah. Right. So if I could synthesize what I think you're saying, you're saying that one of the things that you've learned throughout this season and is a consideration of the nature of your relationship with God is that you've realized that you actually like new seasons, new challenges and even change, essentially, and so there's been an excitement that has gone, even, you know, not to be glib about it, but just an excitement that, you know, in the midst of struggle, new things are happening, new things are developing, that your sort of natural disposition is to embrace. You recognize that even in the midst of that, there's a lot of people that struggle with that. Is that what you're saying?
Yep, absolutely, exactly that. Yep. So I think that God has made me to be someone who enjoys newness and enjoys change, and so I can thrive in that situation. But I don't think that that's... A lot of people, that's not their experience. You know, a lot of people thrive in... routine and sameness and knowing what's coming and yeah, which is interesting, because I think that does actually go, that leads as a segue from my perspective to the experiences of my life. You know, going back, and you said I didn't grow up in a Christian home, and that's true, and I grew up not very far from here, actually, just down the hill in Salisbury East, near Madison Park and near Main North Road. Don't worry, this side of Main North Road.
Right. Right. Yeah. But you're very much a local then.
Yeah,
very much a local. So it's interesting, because I always think that like people are connected to place.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big part of reality, I think.
Yeah.
And so this is very much your place in lots of senses.
Yeah. In lots of senses. Up the hill was always a bit different. Like when I grew up as a kid... This was vineyards, actually, where we're at the moment. Like, this was still felt like the country. But my high school life was actually up here. So Padair just started. It got just built, and it was the only thing just about on Yatla Vale Road that went through here. And it was the newest part of, and then the Delphin, what is it called? You know, when they build a new land thing.
Subdivision?
Yeah, that type of thing.
Is that the word you're looking for?
Something like that. Yeah, so I saw this all grow up from this way. So, but it is definitely, my place is a local. I didn't grow up going to church in any sort of way. From this, that's not the experience of my parents. My parents are, I guess, British descent, which is pretty normal for Salisbury in some sort of ways. And so I grew up going to school with a bunch of friends that were either Italian or English. Yeah, I didn't have many friends when I think about it that actually were Australian, like as in their parents were Australian. Yeah, most of my mates were born here.
Right,
but they're all kids from some sort of family from somewhere else.
So why did you go to, because Padare is a private school, and back then I think it was called Padare Christian College.
It was.
So what led to your parents, if they're not from a faith-based background, what led to them sending you there?
Yeah, that's an interesting story. Year seven, I remember going to Salisbury East High. That's what was happening. I was actually going to Salisbury East High. I even went to a open day, and like I was even put in a class, like a transition day during year seven. I was going to the year eight class, but about halfway through year seven, I reckon it was, my dad got a new job, and it was a good paying job for a company called Leisure Allied Industries. Showing the time zones. There you go, Mike.
Okay.
Yeah, that was fun.
Like time zone, like the arcades.
Arcade games and stuff. Oh, yeah. Mate, that was, get free games. That was amazing. Anyway, but it was significantly more than what he was getting paid at the job before. He was state manager. And so my dad talked about me and my brother going to a private school when we got to high school, because he thought, he rated education, thought education was important. But he's quite anti from a faith point of view. That's his background, as being forced by his grandparents to go. He sort of had that sort of anti streak about those types of things. But my mum grew up going and was a Sunday school, grew up going to Church of England. But when her and dad got together, that meant that she didn't go. That just wasn't her. But she thought it'd be good for us to at least have the opportunity to know, so we can make a decision for ourselves, know something about faith. And my dad was actually okay with that idea. Again, from an education and a knowledge point of view, he liked the idea. Yep, we should be able to choose for ourselves. He didn't want to influence in that. He wanted us to be able to have a choice for ourselves. So mum started looking around for private school, and she thought she'd look for something that, had some sort of faith element to it. And so came across Padare. And at the time, they came across really late, and it was already full. So Padare had only just started. It was only 1 year old. The second year where I would have been starting year eight, it was already full, but they put my name down. My parents told me that they didn't tell me that they put my name down, because they thought, oh, he won't get in year eight. But something happened. Year seven finished. It was early December, and they'd got a call from the school saying, I'd got a spot. And so then they had to tell me that, where you thought you were going to school, where most of my friends, the primary school I went to at Madison Park, most of the kids went to Salisbury East High. You know, some of them went to private schools, went to a Catholic, like, because I had, again, some mates that were Italians. They went to Blackfriars and Ross Trevor. But most of my friends were going there. And so I remember having a big argument about, I'm not going to this stupid private school. I don't want to go to, I'm just going to beat, up everybody. That's what I'm going to do. Anyway, all sorts of.
Really?
I was really anti it.
Brought out some violent tendency.
There's always been an element of a little bit of aggression. That's my initial reaction. You wouldn't find that hard to believe, Mike?
Well, Hey, we've spent a bit of time together now, but hang on a second though. But this is something, because this is something that's really interesting and something that I never knew, actually. I mean, I knew you went to Padare, but I didn't realise that you weren't going to Padare for a long time, almost up until the time you started. And then turns out that, well, I mean, I'll let you tell the story. So so a decision that was made by someone else other than you turned out to have very profound effect on your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, it was my mum that wanted, you know, my dad was okay with the idea because he thought we'd get a better education. But it was really mum had picked out Padare. I definitely thought, you know, as a 12-year-old kid, I thought if I whinged enough, I'd be able to go to Salisbury East. I'm not sure why, because it never really worked in my family.
So you gave it a good crack.
Oh, I gave it a crack.
Yeah.
But having said that, like, so this was end of year 7, 1986. 2 weeks later was Christmas, and that was a significant Christmas. That was Christmas Eve. My mum suffered from really bad asthma and ended up in hospital quite often with asthma attacks. And Christmas Eve, we're going over a friend's place, good friends of ours, and mum was on a ventilator machine at home because we had one. Just as she would do sometimes before going out, and she collapsed on the machine, and Dad rang the ambulance, as Salisbury Private Hospital was only just around the corner, really. They came, picked her up, she went in the ambulance, Dad dropped us off at the place we're going to for the party, and he followed the ambulance. I didn't think anything from it. I thought, as in, she'd been picked up by the ambulance a bunch of times because she had an asthma attack. Right. So, oh, asthma attack, no problem.
Yeah.
But then Dad turned up, you know, after a couple of hours back at this party and let me know Mum passed away. All right, just,
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
1986.
Yep. So, obviously that shook our world, and I remember staying at the Bartlam's place for 2 weeks up until the funeral in January, and then next thing I knew, I was wearing a blue uniform when I was at Padare. I don't remember much other than that.
Wow.
And there was, I guess there was nothing to argue anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was there was nothing in me that had any thought for anything else. So it is, like you said, it's interesting how these things come to be. So,
yeah. So, I mean, you know, you're 45 years old now, and 1986 is, like you said, it's a long time ago now. But, you know, 12 years old, losing your mum, I mean, that's a pretty profound moment in life.
Yeah, it's definitely shaped a lot of who I am, because, like I said, I think, look back before 12, it was pretty stable and pretty normal in some sort of ways. But from that moment, there's lots of things. Lots of the world was very different. My dad, how he dealt with it was really working as hard as he could. He just couldn't. So he wasn't around. And so it left me and my brother to, I guess, sort ourselves out.
Mm.
Learn to wash clothes, learn to iron, learn to cook, learn to... things are changing, because sometimes Dad would organise for us to, you know, get a meal from somewhere, and we'd go next door to stay, or we'd go somewhere at his house. Things were always ebbing and flowing and changing, and my dad got remarried like a couple of years later.
Was it 2 years?
Yeah, about two. Oh, not quite two. Somewhere, again... There's some hazy things in that time in my own head, but about halfway, it was January when I was year 10. Yeah, so I guess he actually got married 2 years after, like 2 years after, and he'd met Julie probably, you know, only six months before.
Right.
They were together a few months, and then a few months later they were married.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because as we both know, when men especially lose a spouse in their middle years, it's not uncommon to get married quite quickly.
Yeah.
Right. But it's always, you know, people always do wonder, wonder how the kids perceive that, receive that. Yeah. And so what, do you mind me asking? Not I mean, I, we, not just at all. For those that may be listening, we haven't planned this podcast at all. So, we've gone deep real fast here, which is pretty interesting, but yeah, just, and so I hope I haven't put you on the spot in asking it, but yeah, what was that like for you as a 12, or I guess you were 14 year old by then, hey?
Yeah, yeah. I probably wasn't quite 14 August. So when he first got together was around about when I was 14. Yeah. And I would say there was a fair bit of just, if even in my own memories, there's a fair bit of haze between mum passing and then Julie. You know what I mean? Like, there's not many memories in that time. Yeah.
Mm.
But I do remember Dad saying, oh, thinking of, you know, taking this woman out. And I think in me and brother's head, again, I just thought, oh, this is a good idea for Dad. I thought...
Your brother's older or younger?
Younger.
He's younger.
He's 2 years younger.
Okay.
Yeah, so he would have been in his... He would have been in year seven at primary school, I reckon, when that happened.
Okay.
I definitely, in my head, I was positive with the idea. See, the idea is a positive. It's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense for Dad. I don't know. As a kid, it's not going to affect me much.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And, when they get married, even then, they're still like, oh, that's an exciting idea. Like, you know, someone else. I won't have to actually cook. I might get to go back to being a bit of a kid again in some ways. Like, I was excited. I wouldn't say I was, like, emotionally excited, but I did think, like, this is a good idea.
Mm,
yeah?
Yeah.
There was no feelings, honestly, there was no feelings... For me personally, about, oh, this is going to be weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the experience, like, I guess, like we do in life in general, but I think especially as kids, you know, there's an idealism you can have, like, this sounds good, except, and then you have the reality
right.
of what it is.
Right.
And the reality was so different in my head to what it, you know, oh, this is going to change my life. Someone living and then bringing their older, you know, older son as well into a smaller house.
So Julie had another kid?
She had two kids. Okay. So, but they were older.
Right.
So she was a couple of years younger than Dad, but her kids were significantly older. So Darren was, I reckon he was 23. Yeah, I reckon he was 23 when I was 14. And she had a daughter, Donna, who's 21, but she was married and she'd been married from 19 and was living with her partner. And so, yeah, there wasn't a heaps of relationship, but Darren came into the house as well as Julie and that was different. And in some ways I enjoyed having a bigger brother. Yeah, that was okay. But there's no doubt that the relationship with Julie was, yeah, intensely rocky. It just didn't work
between you and Julie.
Definitely. But my brother struggled too.
Yeah,
I was probably more, I don't know, being the older or being the teenager, definitely. Yeah.
And so well. And so did it work out though between your dad and Julie?
No.
Okay.
No, it didn't.
Right.
And there's definitely a significant amount of the reason that did not work was because of us, me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So they got married and how long were they married for?
So there was, they separated when I was in year 12. So that would have been 2.5 years, but that was, like I said, there was physical stuff between me and Julie.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Going on.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if that'll make the cut, but you never know. Yeah. So she was rough with you then, as a teenager.
Why wasn't I rough with her?
I don't know. I remember photos of you as a teenager. You were a pretty small dude.
You're right. You're right. Ironically, my friends, in hindsight, I didn't know this, but my friends were scared of me, and I don't understand because I definitely copped a number of fists and didn't give many back.
Yeah.
But you're right. The same is true for home. So
it's just funny, isn't it? Once you press record on this thing and you start recording it, the things that come out, and you know, I didn't know that again.
Yeah.
What sort of friend am I? No. So sorry, you can talk as much or as little as you want to about that. But
so the moment again, for whatever it was, there was obviously another massive altercation with me and Julie. She was essentially what it was, and I'd spoken about this before. I reckon at a similar time in late year nine, I'd sort of woken up a little bit and thought about, what is life about? If there's all this pain stuff, I definitely had a significant moment of, I don't know, a precious moment of clarity. I don't know how much clarity it was, but there was definitely a reflection of, what's life about if there's all this pain in it? You know? Mm. My mum died. A good friend, actually, probably similar to, like, the best friends that we went to that party and spent some time with, their daughter died of and just really quickly, they found out after she died that she'd actually had cancer.
Mm.
Like, she died, but they didn't know she had it. Mm. You know, she just was sick, pneumonia, dead. What happened? Mm. When she was a year younger than, you know, she would have been 13.
Mm.
Yeah. Fell sick, went to hospital, suddenly had pneumonia, dead, like, within 2 weeks. So there was, and there, they still suffer from, like, her parents. Like, I can still see them. That's still a pretty significant event that happened. But I guess what I was saying and all this, I thought to myself, what is life about?
Mm.
And I remember making a significant choice that I thought, the only thing that's worthwhile is when I feel good.
Mm.
So I'm going to just try and feel good. So I'm not going to care too much about schoolwork. I'm going to go do the things that I like doing.
So it's sort of like
a
conscious decision.
Yeah, ultimately. Yeah. Now the language before, you know, hedonism was my friend now, but really just ultimately selfish. Yeah, which I guess teenagers can do from time to time. But there was actually a conscious decision. I didn't realise it meant being selfish.
Mm.
Yeah, but I just was like, I can't deal with all this pain. I'm just going to do what feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was the clash that started to happen with Julie. And that's what I was going to say. She didn't deal with it well, and there's some things, like, she wasn't great at, but it was always going to clash. Because she wanted me to not do, you know what I mean? She wanted me to be a kid again.
And right.
That ship had sailed. You know what right. I mean? That I was all fairly independent. Right. That I could cook for myself. I could all do the things that a kid, you know what I mean? You hope a kid can do.
Yeah.
But I could do.
Well, by virtue of necessity.
Yeah, necessity. But with immaturity still.
Yeah.
A massive immaturity. Yeah. I hadn't grown necessarily as a person, but practically I could look after myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're in it. So you're in the middle of your teenage years.
Yeah.
You've raised yourself to a point. Life from a mixed marriage, mixed, just, you know, meaning two different families.
Yeah.
From what I understand, you got a pretty significantly close group of friends at school. Or at least some friends that really matter.
Yeah, there were some good friends, and they probably became better friends probably outside of school.
Okay.
So definitely had a good bunch of mates at school. I had some mates that really cared about soccer, and again, I cared about soccer. And so we literally played soccer before school, recess, lunch. That's what we did. And anybody who wasn't really into soccer, ended up being into soccer because we dragged them into that space. And so that, I guess that was the foundation point. But there was a close bunch of friends for a good while there. And I heard about faith for the first time at school when all this other chaos was swirling, you know. And to be honest, I think I always thought that there was some sort of God. You know, if I really think about it, I think there was, I always felt like there was maybe something bigger. But what was presented to me, I thought was crap. Yeah? I didn't agree. I thought it was, nah. You know, I don't know what I can say other than, nah, I don't like this.
Not interested.
Yeah, I don't like this. This doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, not interested. I'd hear some of these mates would go to church, which really surprised me. Because, yeah, even at that time, if you spoke with some of my mates, like names of people you probably might know now, like Scott Berry and Michelle Berry.
Other pastors.
Yeah, other pastors. And Matt Howarth and Adam Lowe and, yeah, a whole bunch of other people. Jason McKevin and, yeah, a whole bunch of people that, yeah, some of them I know went to church, probably wasn't a significant part of their life at that time. Yeah, what I was hearing, like I said, I just didn't take particularly seriously, or didn't think it was for me. But in some ways they were there for me as much as I allowed it to. Like I said, my focus was fun, so I allowed them into my life a bit as fun. But in year 12, like I said, my dad, it happened in actually year 11 that they separated. There was a big argument. My dad, for some reason, usually he was on Julie's side, for some reason he stuck up for me, and then they got into a bit of an altercation, and then they separated, and so we ended up down in Salisbury.
So you moved house at that time?
Me, my brother, and my dad moved out.
Right.
Yep. And I think he thought it was over. And I thought this was great. Oh, it was a great idea. I was so stoked about it. I was down with some mates. I went to school. I got up to all sorts of no good down there. That's for sure. All sorts.
I think our listeners might like to know an anecdote. Like, of you getting into trouble. And
okay,
I mean, you're a rascal. People are going to give you some grace here.
Sure. Okay, I can think of one. So I had a few mates live walking distance from there.
Yeah.
One from Phil from school, little fella, was actually smaller than me. He lived, and his parents used to work, had their own news agency, and then did like paper round type stuff. Anyway, quite often walked to his place and would steal his dad's alcohol and sit out the back and drink. But quite often what we'd do as well is this other mate of his that was in sort of a gang that sometimes like ask us to steal cars with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Stealing cars?
Yeah. Oh. So anyway.
Well, it's just...
I was definitely too gutless to be the instigator of these things, but I was happy to join along. It was pretty exciting,
right?
And I definitely never drove because, yeah, at that stage I hadn't, like, it was underage, like, but these guys could, so I was definitely a hanger-oner. But there was this one time where we were at Phil's place and his Dean was there. It was just him and us, and we were and it would have been about 2 o'clock in the morning. And Phil thought it'd be a good idea because he had keys to this terrible story. Anyway, he had keys to his grandma's house, who because he would like drop over groceries and stuff. But he thought, wouldn't it be a good idea to go take her car?
Keys to his grandma's car.
Well, his grandma's car keys were inside, but he had keys to the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we thought we'd go over at night.
Yeah,
take the keys, take the car,
right,
for a bit of fun, and then we'll drop it back off. Oh, great idea! So we did that, went round, yeah, went inside. Phil went inside, got the keys. I don't know why I thought this was a good idea. Anyway, for some reason, his grandma didn't wake up. We took the car. We were rolling around.
What sort of car was it?
It was green. It wasn't a Corolla, but it was like an old Toyota.
Like a Corona?
Maybe it was a Corona. Yeah.
Bit beefier than a Corolla.
Yeah. It's a 70s sort of thing. Anyway, it had a visor. I remember that. You know, one of those front sunglasses and things. Anyway. And Dean decided to drive because I'm not even sure if Phil's feet could have reached the pedals. Honestly, he was so short. Anyway, and we drove around for a bit and then we left it somewhere. And so one of the other things we used to do in the late 90s, late 80s, early 90s, there was a bit of a craze of graffiti. Graffiti was sort of in and it was the start of gangster rap. And for some reason, we all thought we were gangsters from Compton. And anyway... because it was something definitely to come to, and so we would go around graffitiing sometimes, putting tags up, and it was free. It was the time where there was free bus rides for students. I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember that? Like,
it was free. Anyway, really vaguely. You got to remember, I'm significantly younger than you, so
STA was free,
right? Like
you get to school if you're a student.
Yeah.
Anyway. So we rode around the buses and tag on the buses, leave a little bit of graffiti and it'd be fun. But anyway, so we had some spray cans and we decided that we'd park the car a bit away and we were walking around looking for some fences and stuff. And there was this nice wall on a video store near Phillip Highway. And at that time, we were walking that way because I thought, I'm going to go. I actually think you want to walk my place, go my place. So on the way we're looking for places and this video store, and so Dean put up this massive tag and we tagged a couple other things, and as we just stopped and we're starting to walk through the car park, a cop car come down Phillip Highway, and I was just like, oh no, they see us, and this brake, we've all got spray cans in our hands, and literally 30 seconds 1 minute later so I just like threw the spray cans into the bushes while I was still walking. Phil did not even, he just stunned, like was just holding them. They came up and talked to us and they said, guys, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, what are you doing? Oh, we're just walking, we're just walking my mate home. Yeah, we're just walking home. Yeah, no problem. And Phil's just standing there, like spray cans in his hands. Would have been paint all over our hands. And they told us, oh, it's a bit late to be doing that. Yeah, we'll just at a party at Phil's place and we're just walking through. Oh, yeah. I reckon you should just get home. Do you want a lift? No, we're fine. Are you sure? Yeah. Okay. And they just left. And somehow we did not get caught. I do not know how. I have no idea.
So let me get this straight. You've been underage drinking. You're stealing cars. You're graffitiing. You get confronted by the cops in the act of, and you walked away.
We walked away, yes.
Did you ever, it actually brings me to another question. Have you ever been arrested?
Yes.
You have been arrested.
I have been arrested.
What were you arrested for? Is it a story worth telling, or is it something lame, like you didn't pay a fine or something like that?
Yeah, it's that lame. That's an amazing story as well, but we'll probably go too long with that one. I was actually... I'm trying to think. I was working at a church at the time. There you go. So,
You got arrested while you were working at a church.
Yeah,
but not as a conscientious objector for some noble cause.
Then I wasn't following God. But when I got arrested, it was because I was following. No, it was when I was following God. Anyway, okay.
Story
for another time.
The truth is,
I did get my future father-in-law to bail me out though.
Hey,
it was pretty funny. When Ange was just my girlfriend, I asked,
excellent.
Imagine that conversation, Mike, you know. Izzy's boyfriend rings you up and goes, oh, can you get me out of jail? How do you reckon that one will go?
Well, I think it'd be probably unwise for me to make any sort of comment at the moment, considering both Izzy and any potential boyfriend she may or may not have are underage. Anyways. So I guess the truth is that story is a good indicator that There's a reservoir of great stories there.
And
at some point though, at some point you've been interrupted with the story of God intersecting in your life. Or or that would be to say that he wasn't present beforehand, and I firmly believe that he probably was, that he was. And not probably, that he was. But there's a place somewhere along the journey where you start to develop a consciousness of God and his role in your life. Do you want to tell us about that?
And so that's what I'd say, looking in hindsight, you look at some of those events, you know, like me going to Padre and having the opportunity to hear of him, and opportunity, probably it's the mates that I met from there. God intervened in some sort of way, or it was definitely intervention. Well, I didn't recognise it at the time to be involved in that sort of area. So it is those mates. So I guess that's also a conversation where my dad separated halfway through year 12. My dad actually was drinking quite heavily at that stage because he was pretty low. And he was meeting with Julie, but not letting us know. And so he would disappear. So definitely at least the second half of year 12, he wasn't around much. He was with Julie, and me and my brother were pretty much on our own in that place up until probably August, September, and he said we were moving back. Which obviously a couple of months before exams.
Wow. Where did she live? So you're living in Salisbury. Modbury.
On North East Road.
Okay. On North East Road.
Yeah.
Wow.
Far out. Just up, you know, just up from Pelican Plaza and,
Like further towards the hills?
Yeah.
From Pelican Plaza? Yeah.
They're real close. So, anyway, so living there, that's where we lived previously. And then we moved out down to Salisbury and then moving back there. And it was that time I just thought, I can't do this.
Yeah.
I need a way out. I've always wanted to go to England. We had some relatives come over, my parents, my mum's brother had come out for a couple of weeks, and and he said, oh, you should think of coming and say good day. And so I decided, I made a plan, then got a bit saved, gonna save a bit more, I'm gonna grab one way ticket and I'm off, I'm out of here. So at the end of year 12, so you can imagine that, like, how well, I guess, I cared about what was happening with year 12. Some education, some subjects always came pretty easy to me. And so I probably got away with not being able to do much and was able to pass quite well, like maths and sciences. But other stuff, it was a bit of a struggle for me. But so I managed to get an okay score, but I'd already was saving, going. In January, I left. It didn't work out that bad going back because I had this hope, this escape clause. So January, I went.
On a one-way ticket to the UK.
UK.
So you're 17? Some of my, 17, 18?
17.
17. Yeah.
And some of my mum's relatives who had never met me, wanted to meet me. Obviously, their last connection with my mum who passed away was her coming over here. So there was a bunch of people who wanted to meet with me and give me a little bit of help. And so, I lived with my uncle for a while, and I spent a bit of time with my granddad. Yeah, a fair bit of time with him. And then I lived a whole bunch of different places and went around
England. Where did they live? What part of the UK were they from?
In East Sussex, the county. Little seaside country town, a bit like Victor Harbour, probably.
Yeah.
Very similar to Victor Harbour, called Bexhill-on-Sea.
Okay.
Which is very close to Eastbourne. A lot of my other relatives lived in Eastbourne.
Okay.
So Eastbourne's well known as a seaside town.
Okay.
And it is the tournament before Wimbledon that a lot of people, the female tournament that they play.
Still. Okay.
There you go. Anyway,
so the men play queens, don't they?
Yeah,
and the women play Eastbourne. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so you're there and you spend what, a year in the UK?
Year and a half. I'm just trying to remember. I went, I came back in March. So not real, like 14, 15 months. Yep. So at that time.
That year and a half, given the story you've just told us, you've probably got, many stories just of that time to tell as well. Just think about Jason running around the UK without a care in the world.
Yep.
Well, let me ask you some specific questions there. What did you do for work while you were there?
I did a number of things. An Australian in England at some stage has to work in a pub, so I definitely did that.
Yep.
But not heaps. Most of my work actually was as a checkout chick, like a little. It'd be like an IGA.
Checkout person.
Yes, thank you.
I think it's a store clerk.
Okay, I am old. I'm showing my sexist age. So, yeah, a sort of like an IGA. It was called M&W.
Yep.
There you go. Misselbrook and Weston. Okay. But it was like a smaller supermarket.
Okay.
And so you'd have a couple of people on the registers at a time. That'd be it.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I worked a lot there, but I also worked for the post office at one stage, and so I was doing stuff at the post office as well as, like, so a postie, but as well as they had sometimes newspaper rounds. So,
yeah.
And which you'd walk because houses were close together, so I do postie rounds as well, walking one of those bags. You know, like you've got a handle.
And you put it through the slots in the door.
Yeah.
Sounds fantastic.
That was good fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Walking with headphones in, and just walking down early in the morning. And
Well, you were listening to your iPod, were you?
No.
In the early 90s?
I was listening to a Walkman, and then I upgraded to a Discman.
Yeah, Discman. They were the worst, though, because they'd jump everywhere.
Jump all the time. Yeah, anyway.
But, now here's something that most people wouldn't know, and I don't know if you'll mind me saying it on the podcast or not, but in the UK, you actually spent some time, and you were even a paid soccer player.
Well, paid is definitely not, well, paid like amateurs.
Were you remunerated playing sport?
I was, but that's like amateurs here. Do you know what I mean? Like, you got paid, you know.
That's okay.
10, 20 bucks for a game, and if you score a clean sheet or something. So it's not like professional. It's like I played for a club called Hastings.
Yeah.
And I played half a season there.
Yeah.
And I played reserves.
Okay.
So I didn't even get a first team game. Right? but, you know, they're like,
you got
eighth division.
You got a couple of quid.
Yeah.
Did you?
I did.
Do you remember?
And I got free drinks. Yeah. Like, people who came out to watch you would buy you drinks. So,
all right.
You know, there you go.
All right. So there's lots more in the UK. This is a church podcast.
Yes.
So let's hear what happened when you got back.
Okay. Right. So, yeah. So what I will explain, which I feel like is the providence of God in that circumstance as well, is I was quite enjoying my life there. Yeah. I was, again, in the focus of fun, but in the back of my mind where I thought, if I just change where I am, everything will be better. There was definitely still an element where I felt like what I was trying to get away from was just me, and I'd still have me with me. And there was still an element of hopelessness and depression. What's the point of all this?
Yeah. Oh, hang on, I've got to hold you up there. That's really interesting because you've just used some words that are quite profound. And you'll know from a band that we both like, the Counting Crows.
Yes.
He says, Adam Dewar, he says, how can I keep myself away from me?
Yeah.
So can you just, before Absolutely. We get to the moment of conversion, what did that mean? You weren't easy being with yourself even though you're having fun?
Yeah, I think.
Go on.
All right. I think there's an element that at the end of what you think fun, you just want life to have meaning. You want to be doing what's the point of all this. You want it to make sense and be like for a reason, and fun doesn't feel that. Like, it might feel good at the time, but there's a massive cavern of hopelessness that always exists. And I thought I could fix that. I thought circumstances are the problem, or my job's the problem, or the place is the problem, and when I started to realize this funk, this hopelessness, this depression as such, or the dark cloud, it's me. I bring the problems. It's not other people bringing it to me. I bring the problems. It's actually me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's like, that's a sad place to get to when you realise that, because exactly like that, the lyrics of that, you can't, you know, in some ways it's the same lament that you hear in Jonah, in saying, even we quite often say it as a positive, But I actually think Jonah meant it as a lament, like, where can I go to get away from you, God?
Mm.
Yeah? We say that in the positive. Mm. I'm not convinced Jonah was saying it in the positive.
Like, you're thinking, actually, just let me be.
Me.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
Let me go.
I've not ever heard someone put it like that before.
But having said that, that's also, obviously, that's also the gift of and the profound nature of who God is and the love of God is that we can't get away from him. And so this is what I'd say. I was in a place of realization that I was, in some ways, like we're saying, I was ready for God.
Mm.
Because of this feeling, I bought a ticket to come home, a one-way ticket. Let's see what, I feel like I haven't given a chance what back in Australia. So let's give a chance. If it doesn't work out, I'll go back to England. And I came back and I've been gone 14, 15 months and I got in contact with some mates from school.
Mm-hmm.
And those mates, like I said, like Scott Berry and Maddie and Gary Glidden and Mal Weatherly and a few, they were all going to Clovercrest and quite a number of them during that time I was away, I guess, started to own their faith. Started to go, this is who I want to be. This is what I'm going to do.
What do you mean by that?
Own faith.
Own their
faith.
I think growing up
in the church, you can go, oh, there is a God, and it's not affecting your life.
Okay.
You haven't made a profound choice for yourself to go, no, this is not only what I believe, but this is what I'm going to follow. And I think that happened for a lot of my mates at that time when I was away. And so when I came back, they were like, oh, their mate. And at that time, my nickname was Boner. So, oh, mate, Boner's back. This is awesome. We included him in what we're doing, which was going to church and youth and young adults and I don't know, Scott probably it was, but for the other mates, not necessarily. They might not have seen it as evangelistic, you know what I mean? They just were glad to have their mate back. But they invited me to stuff with no worry, no... Oh, it's about something else. It's just that they wanted to include me again in life. And I had no problem with that idea. Again, I'm not anti. I just was like, and I'm a people person. So I wanted to hang out with people. It's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, what are you doing? Okay, let's do that. I didn't have many other people to hang out with. So that's what I did. I came back and I did year 13 at Marden.
Okay.
That year.
Had you failed year 12 the first time?
No, it just wasn't. It was mid-60s percent-wise.
Okay.
And I probably could have got into some stuff, but I knew, like, I'd got sort of 17 out of 20 for maths and both maths. It was the other subjects that were... Anyway, so I went back to Martin and did a few more subjects.
Mm.
And I started going to church and I started hearing stuff about God again. I just didn't, it didn't affect me, but what did affect me is that I could see my mates had something I didn't.
Mm.
Yeah. And I could see, not that their lives were better, but they had an underlying hope. Yeah. They had something catching them. I felt like when something bad came for me, it's again, I was reminded of this bottomless pit.
Mm.
And it was like, I'm falling and there's nothing I can do about it.
Mm.
Where these guys always seem to be like, in the end, things will be okay. Yeah, in the end, things will be better. Yeah? And this will be for a purpose. And it actually frustrated me a lot, to be honest. I could see in them. And I actually used to ask them sometimes, what is this? And I remember Scott telling me, yes, because he had a faith in God. It's like he had faith in Jesus. And he chose to follow that. And he thought about that. And I was like, no, that's not what it is. That's not what it is. I didn't want it to be that. But I'd continue to go along to stuff just because I wanted to hang out. I remember a significant time where God really did speak to me. And Scott, again, September that year, he invited me. So I'd have these mates that I'd hang out with the church, and then I'd have these mates that I'd hang out with Martin, and so we'd go out and drink and do stuff. And then, I'm sure for my mates at church, it would have been funny. But this guy would, yeah. Anyway, I went with them to a youth night. It must have been like a BYF or something. Like it was a bigger youth, like other churches.
Yeah.
And it was actually at Teacher Gully. Here you go. So at Teacher Gully Baptist.
At Teacher Gully Baptist.
Yeah. And Terry Williams was speaking.
Right.
And Terry was speaking, and then all of a sudden he said, like, if you feel like God's speaking to you,
yeah,
maybe you should think about coming down the front. And right at that moment, I had this massive feeling in my chest, and my heart felt like it was beating out of my chest. And I had this feeling like and in my head it said, you need to go down the front. And I was like, oh, and I was deep breathing, and I go, oh, whoa. And it must have been significant enough that Scott, who was sitting next to me, he goes, are you all right? Do you want to go down the front? And I said, nah, fine. And I resisted. I was like, oh, so glad I resisted that.
You're like, oh, I'm not falling for that old ultra cold trip, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm really glad I resisted that. Okay. And then so Scott goes, what was going on? Like, we went down, we're eating. What was going on? And I just said, oh. Well, I'll talk to you about it later. You know, thinking, oh, he'd probably forget.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was sleeping over his place that night. Sleeping in his trundle. And again, like we've done a number of times, and at his parents' place, 19. And he goes, so he asked me, and I said, and I explained him exactly how it felt like. You know, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. It would have been 2 o'clock in the morning, don't know, early in the morning. And he goes, you know, oh, I think that was God. And I said, Scott, we've had this conversation a number of times. I don't believe that there's a God. Yeah, you know that. I said, yeah, but that experience, mate. And all of a sudden, I just said to him, I just want what you have. I just want what you've got. Yeah. And he just said, well, then it's, I guess what I've got different than you is Jesus. That's just what it is. And so I said to him, tell me what to do. Tell me, just at that space, I just got to the place of where, just tell me what to do. And he was, oh, I've got a tract somewhere. His Bible out, he's looking everywhere for it. Go, we need to pray a prayer. And I was like, oh, okay, there's this prayer, as I know now, sinner's prayer, he would say, and this was going on for a bit, and I said, Scott, does the words matter? And he's like, oh yeah, nah, it doesn't. And so he just said, repeat after me, and he basically prayed, forgive me for things I've done wrong, God, come into my life, I want to follow you. It was a pretty simple prayer, Holy Spirit, come into me. And Scott seemed heaps excited about it. Nothing really, you know, and there wasn't an experience, there wasn't a change, but it was just like, oh yeah. He goes, oh, I want to get up and get the maize on, because it was the Berry's house. You would know this as well. There was no alcohol in it. So he got up and opened a bottle of maize on, and we had a bottle, had a glass of wine.
You had communion. Yeah. Like he had communion. Well, yeah. Or was it just a celebration?
It was just a celebration.
Okay.
It was just a celebration. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, so wake up the next morning. He told his parents, and you know, they thought that was great. So Di and Dave were great people.
Yeah.
And we went to church as you had to if you stayed over in the morning. Nothing. I can't even remember what happened in the morning because I was probably well tired. But night church, went to church at night, 7 o'clock service, and started singing. And all of a sudden, I got this feeling I can't describe to you necessarily, but it felt like it washed over me, and a bit like electricity, but good and warming. And a swear word came to mind, like, oh,
right,
this is real.
Yeah, wow,
this is real.
So
yeah, I feel like I made the decision before without believing in God. As in, tell me what to do. I will follow this because it seems like it makes sense for you. And then suddenly I opened myself up and started singing these words. And suddenly God met me where I was at in my own weird unbelief of going, I want to follow this thing that makes sense to me. And God and I met with Mark Wilkinson, the pastor, that associate pastor, after saying, well, tell me what to do. Mm. What do I do with this now?
Mm.
And I am so thankful to God that my relationship was been based on this idea of tell me what to do. Yeah, don't tell me what to believe. Show me how to interact with God.
Yeah.
Show me how this works.
Yeah.
And the more I started to interact and started to read the Bible, and for the first time it makes sense to my life, the more I wanted to do what it was, because I sensed there was a God that cared about me, had meaning for my life. And so I just wanted to do it.
Yeah. So when you say tell me what to do, what I think your question ultimately was tell me how to live.
Yeah.
Like not as in tell me what to do, here's how to follow the instructions.
Yeah.
But here's what life with God looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the end, yeah. I'm a bloke. It wasn't rules based, but it was, how does the relationship work? You know, what am I meant to do to know this God more?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are the things I'm meant to put in place? To some extent, experience who God is and live that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how's that going for you?
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's very, very normal for most people in my life to be where I am. But I still think, what am I doing here? Yeah, and I'm sure my dad still is amused. Yeah, and there would be people from, even from high school, that would think that is strange.
Mm.
Yeah, here I am.
Well, here you are, and you told us the story of how essentially you came to faith. And that was sort of almost split your life in half, in a sense of your age. Not give or take a couple of years, isn't it? But I'd like to say thank you for sharing that with us. and that's about as good as I could have hoped our first attempt at a podcast to go.
Yeah.
I'm gonna add on a part here just to finish things off. Just to see whether it's a good way to finish a podcast or not. So I don't know whether it'll make the final cut, but these are questions that I don't want you to think too hard about answering.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. So you just need to essentially say the first thing that comes into your mind. All right.
Yeah.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
What should I call this section?
Oh no.
I don't know why. That's not a bad idea. We'll go with that. All right. Welcome to Oh No. All right. And we'll sign off with this pre-show. All right. Jason Lippitt, what is one thing people misunderstand about you?
I'm thinking too much.
Yeah, you're not meant to. Let's start again.
I'm like your dad too much, aren't I?
We're not talking about my dad. All right, we're talking about you. Let's start again. What's one thing people misunderstand about you?
I can be angry sometimes.
What's the best compliment you've ever received?
Just that I love. I love people.
What's the most impressive thing that you know how to do?
Back a trailer.
Can you tell us an irrational fear that you have?
No. I don't know if I have many. I can't even think of an irrational one.
What's the craziest thing you've done as far as romance goes?
I think my proposal was fairly romantic. Yeah. So that's a long story, but there you go. Proposing to my wife.
Good.
Good story. I proposed just out here, though.
Okay.
When it was just a paddock. But there you go.
We'll let Ange tell that story, maybe, when it comes around to being her time. Who was your best roommate before you got married?
Before I got married, I live with two guys I hate to... I can't break them up, but Jason McKevin, Lee Milhench, loved living with those guys.
Why?
I think we understood each other well. Yeah. People from church have faith, but me and Jace probably came from similar backgrounds. English, not grew up in church. But we just understood each other well.
For my final question, as far as you're concerned, what would most bring healing to the world today?
That's so cliche. Sorry, Jesus, you bring most healing to the world. It just would. If people would get that they are okay
yeah.
in who they are. Yeah. And that's what I thought of. If people just understand that they are okay. Yeah. And that they don't need to do stuff. Or and so in the end, the reason you know that is because you know you're loved by a God that's, yeah, that everything's going to be actually okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul Tillich said that grace is the courage to accept acceptance.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Great line. Put it way better than I did. But essentially, that's what I think I was trying
that's
to get to.
That's what came to mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's and what it, I was trying to get
I
to.
I think I've quoted him right there. Yeah. But I
think that there's an... I also think... Brené Brown at the end of that talk where she talks on courage.
Yep.
She talks about that we need to know that we're enough.
Mm.
And I don't mean that as in ourselves, but when we allow God to love us, that's when we know we're enough.
Mm.
In not what we do or what we think or how we can be or, you know, just us. Yeah.
Mm.
And I think when we act into the world from plenty, yeah, rather than scarcity, that I think the biggest issue with humans is that people act into the world from scarcity. Yeah.
Scarcity meaning they're worried that there's not enough of everything to go around.
Yep, and so they take all that they have to give out to either of those. But if you give out of a place of understanding that your cup runneth over, yep.
It's a good word, Jason Lippert. You're a good friend. Thanks for being my first.
Love you, Michael. Went a bit longer than we thought.
Hey? It did go, but we needed to get some of those stories out there. So there you go, King's family. That's for you. And you can email Jason, or he's on Facebook. He's not on Instagram. He's not on Twitter.
No.
I think you are on TikTok, aren't you? You love the TikTok. No, so you want to keep the conversation going with him. As you can tell, he loves a chat, but there's a lot there that hopefully you've got interested in because he's normally got other people chatting. But that is Jason Lippert chatting to you, the King's Community, on our first podcast. We love you. Grace and peace today.